Hades. I control the shadows. They do not control me. He stumbled back into the mortal world at the crest of Half-Blood Hill. He fell to his knees, hugging Thalia's pine tree for support. The Golden Fleece was no longer in its branches. The guardian dragon was gone. Perhaps they'd been moved to a safer spot with the battle so close. Nico wasn't sure. But looking down at the Roman forces arrayed outside the valley, his spirits wavered. The nearest onager was 100 yards downhill, encircled in spiked trenches and guarded by a dozen demigods. The machine was primed, ready to fire. Its huge sling cupped a projectile the size of a Honda Civic, glowing with flecks of gold. With icy certainty, Nico realized what Octavian was up to. The projectile was a mixture of incendiaries and imperial gold. Even a small amount of imperial gold could be incredibly volatile. Exposed to too much heat or pressure, the stuff would explode with devastating impact. And of course, it was deadly to demigods as well as monsters. If that onager scored a hit on Camp Half-Blood, anything in the blast zone would be annihilated, vaporized by the heat, or disintegrated by the shrapnel. And the Romans had 6 onagers, all stocked with piles of ammunition. "Evil," Nico said. "This is evil." He tried to think. Dawn was breaking. He couldn't possibly take down all 6 weapons before the attack began, even if he found the strength to shadow travel that many times. If he managed it once more, it would be a miracle. He spotted the Roman command tent, behind and to the left of the legion. Octavian would probably be there, enjoying breakfast at a safe distance from the fighting. He wouldn't lead his troops into battle. The little scumbag would hope to destroy the Greek camp from a distance, wait for the flames to die down, then march in unopposed. Nico's throat constricted with hate. He concentrated on that tent, envisioning his next jump. If he could assassinate Octavian, that might solve the problem. The order to attack might never be given. Nico was about to attempt it when a voice behind him said, "Nico?" He spun, his sword instantly in his hand, and almost decapitated Will Solace. "Put that down," Will hissed. "What are you doing here?" Nico was dumbstruck. Will and 2 other campers were crouched in the grass, binoculars around their necks and daggers at their side. They wore black jeans and t-shirts, with black grease paint on their faces like commandos.
"Me?" Nico asked. "What are you doing? Getting yourselves killed?"
Will scowled.
"Hey, we're scouting the enemy. We took precautions."
"You dressed in black," Nico noted. "With the sun coming up. You painted your face but didn't cover that mop of blonde hair. You might as well be waving a yellow flag."
Will's ears reddened.
"Llewellyn wrapped some mist around us, too."
"Hi."
The girl next to him wriggled her fingers. She looked a little flustered.
"You're Nico, right? I've heard a lot about you. And this is Cecil from Hermes' cabin."
Nico knelt next to them.
"Did Coach Hedge make it to camp?"
Llewellyn giggled nervously.
"Did he ever?"
Will elbowed her.
"Yeah, Hedge is fine. He made it just in time for his baby's birth." "The baby!"
Nico grinned, which hurt his face muscles. He wasn't used to making that expression.
"Melly and the kid are all right?"
"Fine. A very cute little satyr boy."
Will shuddered.
"But I delivered it."
"Have you ever delivered a baby?"
No. I had to get some fresh air. That's why I volunteered for this mission. Gods of Olympus, my hands are still shaking. See?"
He took Nico's hand, which sent an electric current down Nico's spine. He quickly withdrew.
"Whatever," he snapped. "We don't have time for chit-chat. The Romans are attacking at dawn, and I've got to..."
"We know," Will said.
"But if you're planning to shadow travel to that command tent, forget it."
Nico glared at him.
"Excuse me?"
He expected Will to flinch or look away. Most people did.
But Will's blue eyes stayed fixed on his, annoyingly determined.
Coach Hedge told me all about your shadow travel. You can't try that again.
I just did try it again, Solace. I'm fine.
No, you're not. I'm a healer. I could feel the darkness in your hand as soon as I touched it. Even if you made it to that tent, you'd be in no shape to fight.
But you wouldn't make it. One more slip and you won't come back. You are not shadow traveling. Doctor's orders.
The camp is about to be destroyed.
And we'll stop the Romans, Will said.
But we'll do it our way. Llewellyn will control the mist. We'll sneak around, do as much damage as we can to those onagers, but no shadow travel.
But no.
Llewellyn's and Cecil's heads swiveled back and forth like they were watching a really intense tennis match. Nico sighed in exasperation. He hated working with other people. They were always cramping his style, making him uncomfortable. And Will Solace? Nico revised his impression of the son of Apollo. He'd always thought of Will as easygoing and laid back. Apparently, he could also be stubborn and aggravating. Nico gazed down at Camp Half-Blood, where the rest of the Greeks were preparing for war. Past the troops and Ballisti, the canoe lake glittered pink in the first light of dawn. Nico remembered the first time he'd arrived at Camp Half-Blood, crash landing in Apollo's sun car, which had been converted into a fiery school bus. He remembered Apollo, smiling and tan and completely cool in his shades. Thalia had said, "He's hot."
"He's the sun god," Percy replied.
"That's not what I meant." Why was Nico thinking about that now? The random memory irritated him, made him feel jittery. He had arrived at Camp Half-Blood thanks to Apollo. Now, on what was likely to be his last day at camp, he was stuck with a son of Apollo.
"Whatever," Nico said. "But we have to hurry, and you'll follow my lead."
"Fine," Will said. "Just don't ask me to deliver any more satyr babies, and we'll get along great."
Chapter 46. Nico. They made it to the first onager just as chaos broke loose in the Legion. On the far end of the line, cries went up from the 5th cohort. Legionnaires scattered and dropped their pilla. A dozen centaurs barreled through the ranks, yelling and waving their clubs, followed by a horde of two-headed men banging on trash can lids.
"What's going on down there?" Llewellyn asked.
"That's my distraction," Nico said. "Come on."
All the guards had clustered on the right side of the onager, trying to see what was going on down the ranks, which gave Nico and his comrades a clear shot to the left. They passed within a few feet of the nearest Roman, but the legionnaire didn't notice them. Llewellyn's mist magic seemed to be working. They jumped the spiked trench and reached the machine.
"I brought some Greek fire," Cecil whispered.
"No," Nico said. "If we make the damage too obvious, we'll never get to the other ones in time. Can you recalibrate the aim? Like, toward the other onager's firing lines?"
Cecil grinned.
"Oh, I like the way you think. They sent me because I excel at messing things up."
He went to work while Nico and the others stood guard. Meanwhile, the 5th cohort was brawling with the two-headed men. The 4th cohort moved in to help. The other 3 cohorts held their positions, but the officers were having trouble keeping order.
"All right," Cecil announced. "Let's move."
They shuffled across the hillside toward the next onager. This time, the mist didn't work so well. One of the onager guards yelled,
"Hey!"
"Got this."
Will sprinted off, which was possibly the stupidest diversion Nico could imagine, and 6 of the guards chased after him. The other Romans advanced on Nico, but Llewellyn appeared out of the mist and yelled,
"Hey, catch!"
She lobbed a white ball the size of an apple. The Roman in the middle caught it instinctively. A 20-foot sphere of powder exploded outward. When the dust settled, All six Romans were squealing pink piglets.
Nice work, Nico said. Llewellyn blushed.
Well, it's the only pig ball I have, so don't ask for an encore.
And, Cecil pointed,
somebody better help Will.
Even in their armor, the Romans were starting to gain on solace. Nico cursed and raced after them. He didn't want to kill other demigods if he could avoid it. Fortunately, he didn't need to. He tripped the Roman in the back and the others turned.
Nico jumped into the crowd, kicking groins, smacking faces with the flat of his blade, bashing helmets with his pommel. In 10 seconds, the Romans all lay groaning and dazed on the ground.
Will punched his shoulder.
Thanks for the assist. 6 at once isn't bad.
Not bad?
Nico glared at him.
Next time, I'll just let them run you down, Solace.
Ah, they'd never catch me.
Cecil waved at them from the onager, signaling that his job was done. They all moved toward the third siege machine. In the Legion ranks, everything was still in chaos, but the officers were starting to reassert control. The 5th and 4th cohorts regrouped, while the 2nd and 3rd acted as riot police, shoving centaurs and cynocephali and two-headed men back into their respective camps. The 1st cohort stood closest to the onager, a little too close for Nico's comfort, but they seemed occupied by a couple of officers parading in front of them, shouting orders. Nico hoped they could sneak up on the 3rd siege machine. One more onager redirected and they might stand a chance. Unfortunately, the guards spotted them from 20 yards away. One yelled,
"There!"
Llewellyn cursed.
"They're expecting an attack now. The mist doesn't work well against alert enemies. Do we run?"
"No,"
Nico said.
"Let's give them what they expect."
He spread his hands. In front of the Romans, the ground erupted. 5 skeletons clawed out of the earth. Cecil and Llewellyn charged in to help. Nico tried to follow, but he would have fallen on his face if Will hadn't caught him.
"You idiot."
Will put an arm around him.
"I told you no more of that underworld magic."
"I'm fine."
"Shut up, you're not." From his pocket, Will dug out a pack of gum. Nico wanted to pull away. He hated physical contact. But Will was a lot stronger than he looked. Nico found himself leaning against him, relying on his support.
"Take this," Will said.
"You want me to chew gum?"
"It's medicinal. Should keep you alive and alert for a few more hours."
Nico shoved a stick of gum into his mouth.
"Tastes like tar and dirt."
"Stop complaining."
"Hey!"
Cecil limped over, looking like he'd pulled a muscle.
"You guys kind of missed the fight."
Llewellyn followed, grinning. Behind them, all the Roman guards were tangled in a weird assortment of ropes and bones.
"Thanks for the skeletons," she said. "Great trick."
"Which he won't be doing again,"
Will said. Nico realized he was still leaning against Will. He pushed him away and stood on his own 2 feet.
"I'll do what I need to."
Will rolled his eyes.
"Fine, Death Boy, if you want to get yourself killed."
"Do not call me Death Boy."
Llewellyn cleared her throat.
Guys?
"Drop your weapons!"
Nico turned. The fight at the 3rd onager had not gone unnoticed. The entire 1st cohort was advancing on them, spears leveled, shields locked. In front of them marched Octavian, purple robes over his armor, imperial gold jewelry glittering on his neck and arms, and a crown of laurels on his head, as if he'd already won the battle. Next to him was the Legion's standard-bearer, Jacob, holding the golden eagle, and 6 huge cynocephali, their canine teeth bared, their swords glowing red.
"Well,"
Octavian snarled,
"Greekus saboteurs."
He turned to his dog-headed warriors.
"Tear them apart!"
Chapter 47. Nico.
Nico wasn't sure whether to kick himself or Will Solis. If he hadn't been so distracted bickering with the son of Apollo, he would never have allowed the enemy to get so close. As the dog-headed men barreled forward, Nico raised his sword. He doubted he had the strength left to win, but before he could attack them, Will let out a piercing taxicab whistle. All six dogmen dropped their weapons, grabbed their ears, and fell down in agony.
"Dude!" Cecil opened his mouth to pop his ears. "What the actual Hades? A little warning next time."
"It's even worse for the dogs." Will shrugged.
"One of my few musical talents. I do a really awful ultrasonic whistle."
Nico didn't complain. He waded through the dogmen, jabbing them with his sword. They dissolved into shadows. Octavian and the other Romans seemed too stunned to react.
My elite guard!
Octavian looked around for sympathy.
Did you see what he did to my elite guard?
Some dogs need to be put down.
Nico took a step forward.
Like you.
For one beautiful moment, the entire first cohort wavered. Then they remembered themselves and leveled their pila.
"You will be destroyed!"
Octavian shrieked.
"You Greek eyes sneak around, sabotaging our weapons, attacking our men!"
"You mean the weapons you were about to fire at us?" Cecil asked.
"And the men who were about to burn our camp to ashes?"
added Llewellyn.
"Just like a Greek!" Octavian yelled. "Trying to twist things around. Well, it won't work!"
He pointed to the nearest legionnaires.
"You, you, you, and you. Check all the onagers. Make sure they're operational. I want them fired simultaneously as soon as possible. Go!"
The four Romans ran. Nico tried to keep his expression neutral. Please don't check the firing trajectory, he thought. He hoped Cecil had done his work well. It was one thing to screw up a huge weapon. It was another thing to screw it up so subtly that no one noticed until it was too late. But if anyone had that skill, it would be a child of Hermes, god of trickery. Octavian marched up to Nico. To his credit, the augur didn't seem afraid, though his only weapon was a dagger. He stopped so close, Nico could see the bloodshot veins in his pale, watery eyes. His face was gaunt. His hair was the color of overcooked spaghetti. Nico knew Octavian was a legacy, a descendant of Apollo many generations removed. Now, he couldn't help thinking that Octavian looked like a watered-down, unhealthy version of Will Solis, like a photo that had been copied too many times. Whatever made a child of Apollo special, Octavian didn't have it.
"Tell me, son of Pluto," the augur hissed. "Why are you helping the Greeks? What have they ever done for you?"
Nico was itching to stab Octavian in the chest. He'd been dreaming of that ever since Bryce Lawrence had attacked them in South Carolina. But now that they were face to face, Nico hesitated. He had no doubt he could kill Octavian before the first cohort intervened. Nor did Nico particularly care if he died for his actions. The trade-off would be worth it. But after what happened with Bryce, the idea of cutting down another demigod in cold blood, even Octavian, didn't sit well. Nor did it seem right to sentence Cecil, Llewellyn, and Will to die with him. It doesn't seem right, another part of him wondered. Since when do I worry about what's right?
"I'm helping the Greeks and the Romans," Nico said.
Octavian laughed.
"Don't try to con me. What have they offered you? A place in their camp? They won't honor their agreement." "I don't want a place in their camp," Nico snarled. "Or in yours. When this war is over, I'm leaving both camps for good."
Will Solis made a sound like he'd been punched.
"Why would you do that?"
Nico scowled.
"It's none of your business, but I don't belong. That's obvious. No one wants me. I'm a child of..."
"Oh, please." Will sounded unusually angry.
Nobody at Camp Half-Blood ever pushed you away. You have friends, or at least people who would like to be your friend. You pushed yourself away. If you'd get your head out of that brooding cloud of yours for once...
Enough! Octavian snapped.
D'Angelo, I can beat any offer the Greeks could make. I always thought you would make a powerful ally. I see the ruthlessness in you, and I appreciate that. I can assure you a place in New Rome. All you have to do is step aside and allow the Romans to win. The god Apollo has shown me the future.
No!
Will Solace shoved Nico out of the way and got in Octavian's face. I am a son of Apollo, you anemic loser. My father hasn't shown anyone the future, because the power of prophecy isn't working. But this...
He waved loosely at the assembled legion, the hordes of monstrous armies spread across the hillside.
This is not what Apollo would want.
Octavian's lip curled.
You lie! The god told me personally that I would be remembered as the savior of Rome. I will lead the legion to victory, and I will start by...
Nico felt the sound before he heard it.
Thunk, thunk, thunk.
Reverberating through the earth, like the massive gears of a drawbridge. All the onagers fired at once, and 6 golden comets billowed into the sky.
By destroying the Greeks, Octavian cried with glee, the days of Camp Half-Blood are over.
Nico couldn't think of anything more beautiful than an off-course projectile, at least not today. From the 3 sabotaged machines, the payloads veered sideways, arcing toward the barrage from the other 3 onagers. The fireballs didn't collide directly. They didn't need to. As soon as the missiles got close to one another, all 6 warheads detonated in mid-air, spraying a dome of gold and fire that sucked the oxygen right out of the sky. The heat stung Nico's face. The grass hissed. The tops of the trees steamed. But when the fireworks faded, no serious damage had been done. Octavian reacted first. He stomped his feet and yelled,
"No! No! No! Reload!"
No one in the first cohort moved. Nico heard the tromping of boots to his right. The 5th cohort was marching toward them double time, Dakota in the lead. Further downhill, the rest of the legion was trying to form up, but the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th cohorts were now surrounded by a sea of ill-tempered, monstrous allies. The auxilia forces didn't look happy about the explosion overhead. No doubt they'd been waiting for Camp Half-Blood to go up in flames, so they'd get char-broiled demigod for breakfast.
Octavian! Dakota called. We have new orders!
Octavian's left eye twitched so violently it looked like it might explode.
Orders? From whom? Not from me!
From Reyna! Dakota said, loud enough to make sure everyone in the first cohort could hear.
She's ordered us to stand down. Reyna?
Octavian laughed, though no one seemed to get the joke.
You mean the outlaw I sent you to arrest? The ex-praetor who conspired to betray her own people with this Greekus?
He jabbed his finger in Nico's chest.
You're taking orders from her!
The 5th cohort formed up behind their centurion, uneasily facing their comrades in the first. Dakota crossed his arms stubbornly.
Reyna is the praetor until voted otherwise by the Senate. This is war!
Octavian yelled.
I've brought you to the brink of ultimate victory and you want to give up? First cohort, arrest Centurion Dakota and any who stand with him. 5th cohort, remember your vows to Rome and the Legion. You will obey me.
Will Solace shook his head.
Don't do this, Octavian. Don't force your people to choose. This is your last chance. My last chance?
Octavian grinned, madness glinting in his eyes.
I will save Rome.
Now, Romans, follow my orders. Arrest Dakota. Destroy these Greekist scum. And reload those onagers. What the Romans would have done, left to their own devices, Nico didn't know. But he hadn't counted on the Greeks. At that moment, the entire army of Camp Half-Blood appeared at the crest of Half-Blood Hill. Clarice LaRue rode in the lead, on a red war chariot pulled by metal horses. 100 demigods fanned out around her, with twice that many satyrs and nature spirits led by Grover Underwood. Tyson lumbered forward with 6 other cyclopes. Chiron stood in full white stallion mode, his bow drawn. It was an impressive sight, but all Nico could think was,
"No, not now."
Clarice yelled, "Romans, you have fired on our camp! Withdraw or be destroyed!" Octavian wheeled on his troops. "You see? It was a trick! They divided us so they could launch a surprise attack! Legion, cuneum formate! Charge!" Chapter 48. Nico. Nico wanted to yell, "Time out! Hold it! Freeze!" But he knew it wouldn't do any good. After weeks of waiting, agonizing, and steaming, the Greeks and Romans wanted blood. Trying to stop the battle now would be like trying to push back a flood after the dam broke. Will Solis saved the day. He put his fingers in his mouth and did a taxicab whistle even more horrible than the last. Several Greeks dropped their swords. A ripple went through the Roman line like the entire first cohort was shuddering. "Don't be stupid!" Will yelled. "Look!" He pointed to the north, and Nico grinned from ear to ear. He decided there was something more beautiful than an off-course projectile. The Athena Parthenos gleaming in the sunrise, flying in from the coast, suspended from the tethers of 6 winged horses. Roman eagles circled but did not attack. A few of them even swooped in, grabbed the cables, and helped carry the statue. Nico didn't see Blackjack, which worried him, but Reina Ramirez Arellano rode on Guido's back. Her sword was held high. Her purple cloak glittered strangely, catching the sunlight. Both armies stared, dumbfounded, as the 40-foot-tall gold and ivory statue came in for a landing. "Greek demigods!" Reina's voice boomed as if projected from the statue itself, like the Athena Parthenos had become a stack of concert speakers. "Behold your most sacred statue, the Athena Parthenos, wrongly taken by the Romans. I return it to you now as a gesture of peace." The statue settled on the crest of the hill, about 20 feet away from Thalia's pine tree. Instantly, gold light rippled across the ground, into the valley of Camp Half-Blood, and down the opposite side through the Roman ranks. Warmth seeped into Nico's bones. A comforting, peaceful sensation he hadn't had since... he couldn't even remember. A voice inside him seemed to whisper, "You are not alone. You are part of the Olympian family. The gods have not abandoned you." "Romans!" Reina yelled. "I do this for the good of the Legion, for the good of Rome. We must stand together with our Greek brethren." "Listen to her!" Nico marched forward. He wasn't even sure why he did it. Why would either side listen to him? He was the worst speaker, the worst ambassador ever. Yet he strode between the battle lines, his black sword in his hand. "Reina risked her life for all of you. We brought this statue halfway across the world, Roman and Greek working together, because we must join forces. Gia is rising. If we don't work together..."
"You will die!"
The voice shook the earth. Nico's feeling of peace and safety instantly vanished. Wind swept across the hillside. The ground itself became fluid and sticky, the grass pulling at Nico's boots.
a futile gesture.
Nico felt as if he was standing on the goddess's throat, as if the entire length of Long Island resonated with her vocal cords.
But if it makes you happy, you may die together.
No! Octavian scrambled backward. No! No! He broke and ran, pushing through his own troops.
Close ranks! Reyna yelled.
The Greeks and Romans moved together, standing shoulder to shoulder as all around them the earth shook. Octavian's auxilia troops surged forward, surrounding the demigods. Both camps put together were a minuscule dot in a sea of enemies. They would make their final stand on Half-Blood Hill, with the Athena Parthenos as their rallying point. But even here, they stood on enemy ground, because Gia was the Earth, and the Earth was awake. Chapter 49. Jason. Jason had heard of someone's life flashing before his eyes, but he didn't think it would be like this. Standing with his friends in a defensive ring, surrounded by giants, then looking up at an impossible vision in the sky, Jason could very clearly picture himself 50 years in the future. He was sitting in a rocking chair on the front porch of a house on the California coast. Piper was serving lemonade. Her hair was gray. Deep lines etched the corners of her eyes, but she was still as beautiful as ever. Jason's grandchildren sat around his feet, and he was trying to explain to them what had happened on this day in Athens.
"No, I'm serious," he said. "Just 6 demigods on the ground, and 1 more in a burning ship above the Acropolis. We were surrounded by 30-foot-tall giants who were about to kill us. Then the sky opened up, and the gods descended."
"Granddad," the kid said, "you are full of schist."
"I'm not kidding," he protested. "The Olympian gods came charging out of the heavens on their war chariots, trumpets blaring, swords flaming, and your great-grandfather, the king of the gods, led the charge, a javelin of pure electricity crackling in his hand." His grandkids laughed at him, and Piper glanced over, smiling, like, "Would you believe it if you hadn't been there?" But Jason was there. He looked up as the clouds parted over the Acropolis, and he almost doubted the new prescription lenses Asclepius had given him. Instead of blue skies, he saw black space spangled with stars, the palaces of Mount Olympus gleaming silver and gold in the background, and an army of gods charged down from on high. It was too much to process, and it was probably better for his health that he didn't see it all. Only later would Jason be able to remember bits and pieces. There was supersized Jupiter. No, this was Zeus, his original form, riding into battle in a golden chariot, a lightning bolt the size of a telephone pole crackling in one hand. Pulling his chariot were 4 horses made of wind, each constantly shifting from equine to human form, trying to break free. For a split second, one took on the icy visage of Boreas. Another wore Notus's swirling crown of fire and steam. A third flashed the smug, lazy smile of Zephyrus. Zeus had bound and harnessed the 4 wind gods themselves. On the underbelly of the Argo II, the glass bay doors split open. The goddess Nike tumbled out, free from her golden net. She spread her glittering wings and soared to Zeus's side, taking her rightful place as his charioteer.
"My mind is restored!" she roared. "Victory to the gods!"
At Zeus's left flank rode Hera, her chariot pulled by enormous peacocks, their rainbow-colored plumage so bright it gave Jason the spins. Ares bellowed with glee as he thundered down on the back of a fire-breathing horse. His spear glistened red. In the last second before the gods reached the Parthenon, they seemed to displace themselves, like they jumped through hyperspace. The chariots disappeared. Suddenly, Jason and his friends were surrounded by the Olympians, now human-sized, tiny next to the giants, but glowing with power. Jason shouted and charged Porphyrion. His friends joined in the carnage. The fighting ranged all over the Parthenon and spilled across the Acropolis. Out of the corner of his eye, Jason saw Annabeth fighting Enceladus. At her side stood a woman with long dark hair and golden armor over her white robes. The goddess thrust her spear at the giant, then brandished her shield with the fearsome bronze visage of Medusa. Together, Athena and Annabeth drove Enceladus back into the nearest wall of metal scaffolding, which collapsed on top of him. On the opposite side of the temple, Frank Jong and the god Ares smashed through an entire phalanx of giants, Ares with his spear and shield, Frank, as an African elephant, with his trunk and feet. The war god laughed and stabbed and disemboweled like a kid destroying piñatas. Hazel raced through the battle on Orion's back, disappearing in the mist whenever a giant came close, then appearing behind him and stabbing him in the back. The goddess Hecate danced in her wake, setting fire to their enemies with two blazing torches. Jason didn't see Hades, but whenever a giant stumbled and fell, the ground broke open, and the giant was snapped up and swallowed. Percy battled the giant twins, Otis and Ephialtes, while at his side fought a bearded man with a trident and a loud Hawaiian shirt. The twin giants stumbled. Poseidon's trident morphed into a fire hose, and the god sprayed the giants out of the Parthenon with a high-powered blast in the shape of wild horses. Piper was maybe the most impressive. She fenced with the giantess Paraboya, sword against sword. Despite the fact that her opponent was 5 times larger, Piper seemed to be holding her own. The goddess Aphrodite floated around them on a small white cloud, strewing rose petals in the giantess's eyes and calling encouragement to Piper.
"Lovely, my dear. Yes, good. Hit her again."
Whenever Paraboya tried to strike, doves rose up from nowhere and fluttered in the giantess's face. As for Leo, he was racing across the deck of the Argo II, shooting ballistae, dropping hammers on the giants' heads, and blowtorching their loincloths. Behind him at the helm, a burly bearded guy in a mechanic's uniform was tinkering with the controls, furiously trying to keep the ship aloft. The strangest sight was the old giant Thune, who was getting bludgeoned to death by 3 old ladies with brass clubs. The Fates, armed for war. Jason decided there was nothing in the world scarier than a gang of bat-wielding grannies. He noticed all of these things and a dozen other melees in progress, but most of his attention was fixed on the enemy before him, Porphyrion, the giant king, and on the god who fought by Jason's side, Zeus. "My father," Jason thought in disbelief. Porphyrion didn't give him much chance to savor the moment. The giant used his spear in a whirlwind of swipes, jabs and slashes. It was all Jason could do to stay alive. Still, Zeus's presence felt reassuringly familiar. Even though Jason had never met his father, he was reminded of all his happiest moments. His birthday picnic with Piper in Rome. The day Lupa showed him Camp Jupiter for the first time. His games of hide-and-seek with Thalia in their apartment when he was tiny. An afternoon on the beach when his mother had picked him up, kissed him, and showed him an oncoming storm.
"Never be afraid of a thunderstorm, Jason. That is your father, letting you know he loves you."
Zeus smelled of rain and clean wind. He made the air burn with energy. Up close, his lightning bolt appeared as a bronze rod 1 meter long, pointed on both ends, with blades of energy extending from both sides to form a javelin of white electricity.
He slashed across the giant's path, and Porphyrion collapsed into his makeshift throne, which crumbled under the giant's weight.
"No throne for you," Zeus growled. "Not here, not ever."
"You cannot stop us," the giant yelled. "It is done. The Earth Mother is awake."
In answer, Zeus blasted the throne to rubble. The giant king flew backward out of the temple, and Jason ran after him, his father at his heels. They backed Porphyrion to the edge of the cliffs. The whole of modern Athens spread out below. Lightning had melted all the weapons in the giant's hair. Molten celestial bronze dripped through his dreadlocks like caramel. His skin steamed and blistered. Porphyrion snarled and raised his spear.
"Your cause is lost, Zeus. Even if you defeat me, the Earth Mother shall simply raise me again."
"Then perhaps," Zeus said, "you should not die in the embrace of Gea. Jason, my son."
Jason had never felt so good, so recognized, as when his father said his name. It was like last winter at Camp Half-Blood, when his erased memories finally returned. Jason suddenly understood another layer of his existence, a part of his identity that had been cloudy before. Now he had no doubt. He was the son of Jupiter, god of the sky. He was his father's child.
Jason advanced. Porphyrion lashed out wildly with his spear, but Jason cut it in half with his gladius. He charged in, jabbing his sword through the giant's breastplate, then summoned the winds and blasted Porphyrion off the edge of the cliff. As the giant fell, screaming, Zeus pointed his lightning bolt. An arc of pure white heat vaporized Porphyrion in midair. His ashes drifted down in a gentle cloud, dusting the tops of the olive trees on the slopes of the Acropolis. Zeus turned to Jason. His lightning bolt flickered off, and Zeus clipped the celestial bronze rod to his belt. The god's eyes were stormy gray. His salt-and-pepper hair and his beard looked like stratus clouds. Jason found it strange that the Lord of the Universe, King of Olympus, was only a few inches taller than he was.
"My son,"
Zeus clasped Jason's shoulder,
"there is so much I would like to tell you."
The god took a heavy breath, making the air crackle and Jason's new glasses fog up.
"Alas, as king of the gods, I must not show favoritism to my children. When we return to the other Olympians, I will not be able to praise you as much as I would like, or give you as much credit as you deserve."
"I don't want praise," Jason's voice quavered. "Just a little time together would be nice. I mean, I don't even know you."
Zeus's gaze was as far away as the ozone layer.
"I am always with you, Jason. I have watched your progress with pride, but it will never be possible for us to be..."
He curled his fingers, as if trying to pluck the right words out of the air. "Close, normal, a true father and son."
"From birth, you were destined to be Hera's, to appease her wrath. Even your name, Jason, was her choice. You did not ask for this. I did not want it. But when I gave you over to her, I had no idea what a good man you would become. Your journey has shaped you, made you both kind and great. Whatever happens when we return to the Parthenon, know that I do not hold you accountable. You have proven yourself a true hero."
Jason's emotions were a jumble in his chest.
"What do you mean, whatever happens?"
"The worst is not over," Zeus warned. "And someone must take the blame for what has happened. Come."
Chapter 50. Jason. Nothing was left of the giants except heaps of ash, a few spears, and some burning dreadlocks. The Argo II was still aloft, barely, moored to the top of the Parthenon. Half the ship's oars were broken off or tangled. Smoke streamed from several large splits in the hull. The sails were peppered with burning holes. Leo looked almost as bad. He stood in the midst of the temple with the other crew members, his face covered in soot, his clothes smoldering. The gods fanned out in a semicircle as Zeus approached. None of them seemed particularly joyful about their victory. Apollo and Artemis stood together in the shadow of a column, as if trying to hide. Hera and Poseidon were having an intense discussion with another goddess in green and gold robes, perhaps Demeter. Nike tried to put a golden laurel wreath on Hecate's head, but the goddess of magic swatted it away. Hermes sneaked close to Athena, attempting to put his arm around her. Athena turned her Aegis shield his way, and Hermes scuffled off. The only Olympian who seemed in a good mood was Ares. He laughed and pantomimed gutting an enemy while Frank listened, his expression polite but queasy.
"Brethren," Zeus said, "we are healed, thanks to the work of these demigods. The Athena Parthenos, which once stood in this temple, now stands at Camp Half-Blood. It has united our offspring, and thus our own essences."
"Lord Zeus," Piper spoke up, "is Reyna okay? Nico and Coach Hedge?"
Jason couldn't quite believe Piper was asking after Reyna's health, but it made him glad. Zeus knit his cloud-colored eyebrows.
"They succeeded in their mission. As of this moment, they are alive. Whether or not they are okay..."
"There is still work to be done," Queen Hera interrupted.
She spread her arms like she wanted a group hug.
"But my heroes, you have triumphed over the giants as I knew you would. My plan succeeded beautifully."
Zeus turned on his wife. Thunder shook the Acropolis.
"Hera, do not dare take credit. You have caused at least as many problems as you fixed."
The Queen of Heaven blanched.
"Husband, surely you see now. This was the only way."
"There is never only one way," Zeus bellowed. "That is why there are three fates, not one. Is this not so?"
By the ruins of the giant king's throne, the three old ladies silently bowed their heads in recognition. Jason noticed that the other gods stayed well away from the fates and their gleaming brass clubs.
"Please, husband."
Hera tried for a smile, but she was so clearly frightened that Jason almost felt sorry for her.
"I only did what I..."
"Silence!" Zeus snapped. "You disobeyed my orders. Nevertheless, I recognize that you acted with honest intentions. The valor of these seven heroes has proven that you were not entirely without wisdom."
Hera looked like she wanted to argue, but she kept her mouth shut.
"Apollo, however..."
Zeus glared into the shadows where the twins were standing.
"My son, come here."
Apollo inched forward like he was walking the plank. He looked so much like a teenage demigod it was unnerving. No more than 17, wearing jeans and a Camp Half-Blood t-shirt, with a bow over his shoulder and a sword at his belt. With his tousled blonde hair and blue eyes, he might have been Jason's brother on the mortal side as well as the godly side. Jason wondered if Apollo had assumed this form to be inconspicuous, or to look pitiable to his father. The fear in Apollo's face certainly looked real, and also very human. The three fates gathered around the god, circling him, their withered hands raised.
"Twice you have defied me," Zeus said.
Apollo moistened his lips.
My lord!
You neglected your duties. You succumbed to flattery and vanity. You encouraged your descendant, Octavian, to follow his dangerous path. And you prematurely revealed a prophecy that may yet destroy us all.
But...
Enough!
Zeus boomed.
We will speak of your punishment later. For now, you will wait on Olympus.
Zeus flicked his hand, and Apollo turned into a cloud of glitter. The fates swirled around him, dissolving into air, and the glittery whirlwind shot into the sky.
What will happen to him?
Jason asked. The gods stared at him, but Jason didn't care. Having actually met Zeus, he had a newfound sympathy for Apollo.
It is not your concern, Zeus said. We have other problems to address.
An uncomfortable silence settled over the Parthenon.
It didn't feel right to let the matter go. Jason didn't see how Apollo deserved to be singled out for punishment.
Someone must take the blame, Zeus had said.
But why? Father, Jason said, I made a vow to honor all the gods. I promised Kimopolia that once this war is over, none of the gods would be without shrines at the camps.
Zeus scowled.
That's fine. But... Kim who?
Poseidon coughed into his fist.
She's one of mine. My point, Jason said, is that blaming each other isn't going to solve anything. That's how the Romans and Greeks got divided in the first place.
The air became dangerously ionized. Jason's scalp tingled. He realized he was risking his father's wrath. He might get turned into glitter or blasted off the Acropolis. He'd known his dad for 5 minutes and made a good impression. Now, he was throwing it away. A good Roman wouldn't keep talking. Jason kept talking.
Apollo wasn't the problem. To punish him for G-awaking is...
He wanted to say stupid, but he caught himself.
Unwise.
Unwise.
Zeus's voice was almost a whisper.
Before the assembled gods, you would call me unwise.
Jason's friends watched on full alert. Percy looked like he was ready to jump in and fight at his side. Then, Artemis stepped out of the shadows.
Father, this hero has fought long and hard for our cause. His nerves are frayed. We should take that into account.
Jason started to protest, but Artemis stopped him with a glance. Her expression sent a message so clear she might have been speaking in his mind.
Thank you, demigod, but do not press this. I will reason with Zeus when he is calmer.
Surely, father, the goddess continued, we should attend to our more pressing problems as you pointed out.
Gia,
Annabeth chimed in, clearly anxious to change the topic.
She's awake, isn't she?
Zeus turned toward her. Around Jason, the air molecules stopped humming. His skull felt like it had just come out of the microwave.
That is correct, Zeus said. The blood of Olympus was spilled. She is fully conscious.
Oh, come on, Percy complained. I get a little nosebleed and I wake up the entire Earth? That's not fair.
Athena shouldered her aegis.
Complaining of unfairness is like assigning blame, Percy Jackson. It does no one any good.
She gave Jason an approving glance.
Now you must move quickly. Gia rises to destroy your camp.
Poseidon leaned on his trident. For once, Athena is right.
For once?
Athena protested.
Why would Gia be back at camp? Leo asked. Percy's nosebleed was here.
Dude, Percy said. First off, you heard Athena. Don't blame my nose. Second, Gia's the Earth. She can pop up anywhere she wants. Besides, she told us she was going to do this. She said the first thing on her to-do list was destroying our camp. Question is, how do we stop her?
Frank looked at Zeus.
Sir, your majesty, can't you gods just pop over there with us? You've got the chariots and the magic powers and whatnot.
Yes, Hazel said. We defeated the giants together in 2 seconds. Let's all go.
No, Zeus said flatly.
No, Jason asked. But father.
Zeus's eyes sparked with power, and Jason realized he'd pushed his dad as far as he could for today, and maybe for the next few centuries.
That's the problem with prophecies, Zeus growled. When Apollo allowed the prophecy of 7 to be spoken, and when Hera took it upon herself to interpret the words, the fates wove the future in such a way that it had only so many possible outcomes, so many solutions. You 7, the demigods, are destined to defeat Gia. We the gods cannot.
I don't get it, Piper said. What's the point of being gods if you have to rely on puny mortals to do your bidding?
All the gods exchanged dark looks.
Aphrodite, however, laughed gently and kissed her daughter.
My dear Piper, don't you think we've been asking ourselves that question for thousands of years? But it is what binds us together, keeps us eternal. We need you mortals as much as you need us. Annoying as that may be, it's the truth.
Frank shuffled uncomfortably, like he missed being an elephant.
So how can we possibly get to Camp Half-Blood in time to save it? It took us months to reach Greece.
The winds, Jason said. Father, can't you unleash the winds to send our ship back?
Zeus glowered.
I could slap you back to Long Island.
Was that a joke? Or a threat? Or...
No, Zeus said. I mean it quite literally. I could slap your ship back to Camp Half-Blood, but the force involved...
Over by the ruined giant throne, the grungy god in the mechanic's uniform shook his head.
My boy Leo built a good ship, but it won't sustain that kind of stress. It would break apart as soon as it arrived. Maybe sooner.
Leo straightened his tool belt.
The Argo 2 can make it. It only has to stay in one piece long enough to get us back home. Once there, we can abandon ship.
Dangerous, warned Hephaestus. Perhaps fatal.
The goddess Nike twirled a laurel wreath on her finger.
Victory is always dangerous, and it often requires sacrifice. Leo Valdez and I have discussed this.
She stared pointedly at Leo.
Jason didn't like that at all. He remembered Asclepius's grim expression when the doctor had examined Leo.
Oh my, oh, I see.
Jason knew what they had to do to defeat Gia. He knew the risks, but he wanted to take those risks himself, not put them on Leo.
Piper will have the physician's cure, he told himself. She'll keep us both covered.
Leo,
Annabeth said,
what is Nike talking about?
Leo waved off the question.
The usual. Victory, sacrifice, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter. We can do this, guys. We have to do this.
A feeling of dread settled over Jason. Zeus was correct about one thing. The worst was yet to come.
When the choice comes, notice the south wind had told him, storm or fire, do not despair.
Jason made the choice.
Leo's right.
All aboard for one last trip. Chapter 51. Jason.